Is an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Wednesday Israel will make its own decision and the state of Israel will do everything necessary to defend itself after coming under attack by a volley of Iranian missiles and drones last weekend. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman.
Western countries pleading for restraint have dispatched their top diplomats to Jerusalem. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said Berlin stood in full solidarity with Israel, but warned the region must not, quote, step by step slide into a situation with a totally unpredictable outcome. Following the attack, Iran's foreign minister warned Israel against reprisals, saying, quote, it will definitely face a decisive and harsh response. Washington says it is planning to impose new sanctions targeting Iran's missile and drone programs in coming days and expects its allies will follow suit. EU leaders are due to discuss sanctions at a summit in Brussels, and sanctions are also on the agenda at G7 talks in Italy.
That's Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reporting. AP correspondent Charles E. Ledesma reports an envoy says the U.S. is determined to monitor North Korean nukes through the U.N. or otherwise.
In Seoul, top envoy Linda Thomas-Greenfield has told a press briefing the U.S. will work inside and outside the U.N. to keep North Korea from illegal activities.
The point here is that we cannot allow the work that the panel of experts were doing to lapse. We have to continue to keep eyes on and reporting on the illegal activities of the DPRK and efforts to break the sanctions that have been put in place.
The ambassador added she does not expect Russia and China to change their stance and cooperate with other members of the UN Security Council.
This is VOA News. Undersecretary General Rosemary DiCarlo told the United Nations Security Council Wednesday conflict and climate change are among the greatest threats to youth in the Mediterranean region. DiCarlo told the council that across the globe, roughly 25% of young people are affected by violence or armed conflict. But, and God...
70% of the population in Gaza is under 30. Almost all have been exposed to unprecedented levels of trauma, violence, disease, and food insecurity.
DiCarlo also pointed out the effects of climate change on youth in the region, saying it's particularly vulnerable with temperatures rising at a rate of 20% faster than the global average. Lawyers for former U.S. President Donald Trump say that Stormy Daniels refused to accept a subpoena. They tried to serve her. More details from AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer.
Donald Trump's legal team says it tried serving a subpoena on Stormy Daniels as she arrived for a screening of her documentary at a gay bar in Brooklyn last month. But the porn actor and a key player in Trump's hush money trial refused to take it and walked away. Newly filed court documents show a process server working for Trump's lawyers approached Daniels with the papers, demanding information related to a documentary recently released about her life and involvement with Trump, but was forced to leave the papers at her feet after Daniels ignored them. The encounter outside the $3 bill nightclub has touched off a month-long battle between Trump's lawyers and Daniels' attorney. Daniels' lawyer says they never received the paperwork. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports the U.S. Senate has ended Homeland Security Chief Alejandro Mayorkas' impeachment trial in a blow to the House of Representatives.
For the first time in nearly 150 years, the House impeached a cabinet secretary. But then...
the Senate, sitting as the Court of Impeachment, stands adjourned sine die.
The Democrat majority voted to dismiss both impeachment articles and end the proceedings before any arguments, after Majority Leader Chuck Schumer argued the GOP charges failed to meet the impeachment standards of high crimes and misdemeanors.
An illegitimate and profane abuse of the U.S. Constitution.
Top Republican Mitch McConnell argued the Senate was effectively ignoring the House.
It's not a proud day in the history of the Senate.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Indonesian authorities have issued a tsunami alert after eruptions at a mountain state ashed thousands of feet high. from Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Forte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 18, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The UN Human Rights Chief calls for action to prevent violence in DRC.
Turk was speaking in Goma on Wednesday after visiting the camp for internally displaced persons in Bulengo, west of Goma in North Kivu province.
The U.S. sanctions four former Malawi government officials for alleged corruption. East Africa is experiencing heavy rains. The Liberian political leader vows to continue engaging for fundamental change in the country. Uganda increases security as President Museveni prepares to meet with Kampala City protesting traders tomorrow, Friday.
Of course, the situation is tense because the businessmen are the bloodline of the country. And unfortunately, it's now coming to 2 weeks since the strike started.
And Jordan's King Abdullah says the country will not be battleground in the Israel-Iran confrontation. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. During a visit this week to the troubled Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, the United Nations Chief Human Rights Official called on the international community to take seriously the violence in North Kivu, which is causing a humanitarian crisis. Zanep Neti Zaide has details from Goma, Eastern DRC.
When UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Volker Turk met victims of the rebel conflicts in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, he said more must be done to fight the violence that has forced millions of people to flee their homes. Turk says justice must be applied, that there is a need for transitional justice. He says he has worked with the authorities on this, but given the precariousness of the humanitarian situation, it is urgent to work on it in a very strong way so that peace can return. Turk was speaking in Goma on Wednesday after visiting a camp for internally displaced persons in Bulengo, west of Goma in North Kivu province. The camp is home to thousands of people who fled when the M23 militant attacked their villages. The UN's human rights chief was accompanied in Goma by the representative of the UN Secretary General in the DRC, Bintou Keita, and Congolese Human Rights Minister Fabrice Puela. The UN and the International Organization for Migration estimate around 7 million people are internally displaced in the eastern DRC, making it one of the world's biggest displacement crises. The world body has called for $2.6 billion American dollars in aid to help the displaced and to fend off hunger. Hundreds of thousands of displaced people live in camp Turk visited, often spending days without food and sometimes cramped in churches transformed into dormitories. Some of them, such as Furaha Jose, are asking for help to come home. She says she's asking the UN authorities to help them get back to their homes, because where they are, they can't trade or go to the fields. At the camp, many residents have memories of human rights violations committed by M23 rebels. They hope his visit will speed things up so that they can obtain justice. She says they fled the rebels' abuses, and along the way they were victims of more. Aline says she is delighted by the UN commissioner's visit and hopes that solutions to her problems will be found. The M23 is one of the largest and most violent of the more than 100 rebel groups operating in the eastern DRC. Turk's mission, which continues until Thursday, includes meetings with senior officials to discuss strategies for protecting civilians and preventing human rights violations. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Netizaidi in Goma.
The United States has denied entry to four former Malawi government officials because of their alleged involvement in corruption. Reuters cited the State Department as saying the four officials are former Solicitor General and Secretary of Justice Rieneke Matemba, former Director of Public Procurement and Disposal of Assets John Suzy Banda, former Malawi Police Service Attorney Mwambi Kaluba, and former Inspector General of the Malawi Police Service, George Kainia. Malawi's Information Minister Moses Kunkuyu says that President Lazarus Chakwera's fight against corruption continues to bear fruit. He tells me Malawi believes in the rule of law and awaits the outcome of the U.S. travel ban.
As the Malawi government, we believe in the rule of law. And the Anti-Corruption Bureau is an agency under the government, and they took action in the first place. So we will await the conclusion of those cases, and it is based on the conclusion from those cases that we'll be able to make some comments on the same. But on the development that has happened, I believe that's the position that has been taken by a separate government altogether.
So what did your government do to these officials, the three officials? Did they undergo any investigation?
No, there are some issues, of course, that have been in court, like the former Anti-Corruption Bureau has some issues that he is answering before the courts, but wouldn't know if the action taken by the U.S. government is related to that particular case. And that is why we are saying that anything that is said to have been done against the laws that has triggered this action by the U.S. government, we will leave it at that stage as an action that has come from them. But on our part, we will still observe and comment appropriately when the actual details have come to the fore. But for anything that is being pursued by us, we will wait until the matters that are before the courts, like in the case of the gentleman, Mr. Matemba, that I've referred to, until that those matters are concluded. But the action that has been taken by the U.S. government, we treat it as some action by a standalone government altogether.
I know that President Chakwera, when he came to power, he declared war on corruption. What would you say are the results so far from the president's fight against corruption?
There is a lot of success that has been recorded. We've seen people being arrested, people answering charges before the courts, and the movement that is there currently is not just automatic. It's as a result of some political will from the president. We have seen an increased funding towards the Anti-Corruption Bureau. We have seen the president making moves to ensure that the Anti-Corruption Bureau is well-staffed, but also removing some other pieces of legislation that required, that kind of stood in the way for the Anti-Corruption Bureau to process cases in a timely fashion. So these three moves that the president initiated have led to an increased rate of cases being brought before the courts. So we can say the fight against corruption that the president initiated is bearing fruit, and other countries and institutions are recognizing those efforts as well.
Moses Kunkuyu is the Malawi's information minister. He was speaking with us from Jerusalem, Israel. In Uganda, security measures have been beefed up in different parts of the country as businesses in major towns remain paralyzed during a week-long Kampala City Traders protest about new taxation rules proposed by the Uganda Revenue Authority. Military officers have also been deployed to neutralize any violence. According to the Uganda Monitor, the traders Wednesday rejected an appeal to reopen their shops as they prepare to meet with President Yoweri Museveni this Friday. Theodore Sekikubo is a Uganda Member of Parliament. He tells viewers Douglas Mpuga that there is an urgent need to resolve the issue.
Of course, the situation is tense because the businessmen are the bloodline of the country. And unfortunately, it's now coming to 2 weeks since the strike started. There had been prior engagement with the government, and we thought it would stop. But now, unfortunately, the strike is still on. Number two, it is threatening to escalate to other areas and other districts in the southern part of the country. We hope sense prevails. We can sit down and we've charted the way forward because they are now striking and they are gathering momentum. But the good thing, I understand that there is a scheduled meeting with His Excellency the President on Friday. So we hope their grievances can be addressed then, and then the situation normalizes. Because without that, the business community is in trouble, the country is in trouble, our budget is largely a cash-based budget, and any continued strike has an adverse effect on the economy, the stability of the currency, and the macroeconomic stability at large.
There are fears of violence and that security forces have deployed in many parts of the country. Is that correct?
Violence hasn't yet broken out. But what is true is that the security forces have deployed in anticipation. But there is no violence yet. We do hope they act in restraint. The traders, when they are striking, yes, we know. We understand their grievances. But then it shouldn't trigger violence. And even the security forces, the police and the army, should act with restraint, not to be provocative, because such circumstances and situations, when people and businessmen get desperate, you never know what they are likely to do next. But we urge restraint on the part of both sides. But also, number two, government should, as a matter of priority, expedite the engagement with the business community, because it is adversely affecting our economy. It is adversely affecting the planned economic activities, the planned output, and even the ongoing budget process. So you cannot say it does not concern us, because it is affecting the heart, the bloodline of the country.
Theodore Sekikubo is a Uganda Member of Parliament. He spoke from Kampala with Douglas Mpuga. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 18th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. In Liberia, the leader of the opposition Alternative National Congress, ANC party, says he will continue to engage with other political parties and civil society to bring about fundamental change in Liberia. Alexander Comis says only change can move Liberia forward. This week, Comis's ANC and two other political parties ended their collaboration, formed shortly before the 2023 presidential election. Comments tells me that the Collaborating Political Parties, or the CPP alliance, was only for the 2023 election, and that it ended on amicable terms.
James, we had a very successful relationship with the Liberty Party in the CPP. The agreement had a time limit. It was an electoral, if you will, collaboration, and the agreement that we all signed said that the 6 months after the election, the agreement will lapse. And both institutions, the Liberty Party and the Alternative National Congress, decided to let it lapse per the agreement to celebrate the successes we had and to commit to future collaboration with each other and with other political institutions. So there's no acrimony, there are no issues per se. Unlike many other collaborations, we're ending on a very amicable terms. We will continue to have conversations, we'll collaborate in the interest of Liberian people. And more importantly, we want to work with other opposition parties to hold the government accountable to make sure that they deliver on behalf of the country.
That's exactly what I want to ask, because you are quoted as saying that you are hopeful that we will put our country over party and national interest over self-interest. In what capacity will you be engaging this time?
Yeah, so look, I plan to engage across the board. I plan to stay engaged politically to make sure the ANC is still a vibrant and active political institution. I plan to engage with civil society organizations, with religious institutions. Because, James, the change mantra, the change agenda still exists. For Liberia to move forward requires fundamental change across the board. And so, yes, unfortunately, we did not win the elections, but our commitment to our country, to our people, to seeing a better life for the average Liberians, that determination is undeterred, is there. And we will keep engaged across the board, not just politically, because the change that Liberia requires needs to happen in all facets of our country, all facets of society.
Mr. Comet, have you been offered a position in President Joseph Boakai's administration, or you would prefer to be in the opposition?
I have not been offered a position in the Boakai administration. Neither did I expect or want a position in the Boakai administration. You know, every country, every organization, everybody plays different roles. And so in my case, I want to, again, to engage our country more broadly about the changes I think all of us individually, collectively, institutionally, we need to engender, we need to push forward. I think President Boakai and his administration have now been entrusted to run the country, and I'm hopeful that they would play that role well. My role is to continue to push the change agenda across the board, and part of that role is to hold the government accountable to deliver on behalf of the Liberian people.
Alexander Comes is the leader of the opposition Alternative National Congress Party of Liberia. He was speaking with us from the capital, Monrovia. East Africa is experiencing heavy rains, with reported flooding in Kenya killing at least 13 people so far. Floods have also killed 58 people in Tanzania during the last 2 weeks, according to the government. The coastal region was hit hardest, with 126,831 people affected, the government said. Infrastructure has also been damaged, and those living in flood-prone areas are being urged to move. The rains are expected to reach their peak towards the end of this month. To find out more about the flood situation in the region, VOA's Douglas Mufuga reached Hussein C. Andries, a researcher at the IGAD Climate Prediction and Application Center, the ICPAC.
The region has experienced heavy rainfall for the last few weeks, and even several parts of the region have been affected by flood. And the forecast also shows that this heavy rainfall is likely to continue in the coming 1 and 2 weeks. So that is what our forecast shows.
The region was suffering from serious droughts. Now it's floods. Is this pattern normal?
So climate change is affecting the rainfall pattern in our region. So the intensity and frequency of this weather extremes like floods and droughts are happening and likely to also continue in the future. So the region, as you mentioned, has been affected by this prolonged drought from 2020 up to 2022. Then since again the start of 2023, then we are also experiencing this heavy rainfalls, particularly for March to May 2023, and as well as also October to December 2023, and now again March to May this 2024.
These unusual patterns have caused some deaths in some countries, and the floods are doing the same. Are the governments in the region prepared to handle this?
Yes, somehow, but it's not really to the level that the disaster is impacting. But we have issued this forecast in February for this current season, March to May, 2024 rainfall season, and we have indicated that the region is likely to experience above normal rainfall, again associated with heavy rainfall. So we have issued this forecast, and the government institutions from the different socioeconomic sectors are aware of this information. So the government, they are trying to really reduce this impact of this climate extreme, but not really to the level that it should be.
That was Hussein C. Andries, a researcher at the IGAD Climate Prediction and Application Center. He spoke from Nairobi with VOA's Douglas Mpuga. Jordan's King Abdullah says his country will not be a battleground for any party in the confrontation between Israel and Iran, and the protection of its citizens and sovereignty are paramount. De Gatlock reports from Amman.
Iran's recent attack on Israel underscores Jordan's delicate geopolitical location. The kingdom was geographically sandwiched, sitting between Israel on one side and Iran and its proxies on the other. As Iranian drones and ballistic missiles flew over Jordanian airspace on their way to Israeli targets. In remarks to U.S. President Joe Biden, King Abdullah defended his military's actions in helping intercept and shoot them down, saying Jordan's security and the protection of its citizens come above all other considerations. He said Jordan would not be a theater of war for any side, nor will it allow a regional war to unfold on its land. Jordanian analyst Osama El-Sharif tells VOA Jordan is in a delicate position.
It has to protect its sovereignty. It does not want to be dragged into an open conflict, whether from the Iranian side or the Israeli side. The situation in Jordan is emotionally charged because of Gaza. For the last 6 months, we have had almost weekly protests, very anti-American, very anti-Israeli. They are not in a position to understand the delicate situation that Jordan finds itself in. It wants to bring attention back to the Gaza war, the humanitarian crisis unfolding.
Analyst Amr Sabeili says that from the start of the Gaza conflict, leaders sensed the danger that it could escalate to a larger regional crisis that is already evident in Syria, Lebanon, and the Red Sea. Now, he says, Jordanians got a taste of the conflict when they saw the missiles and drones being intercepted in the skies above them.
It made people worry and see that it might have concrete consequences in Jordan, and therefore His Majesty's word is definitely reassuring and very clear that priority for Jordan is the Jordanian security, stability, and security of its own people.
Al-Sabeili says that while Iran could have launched its attacks from the territories of their allies in Syria or Lebanon, it chose the route over Jordanian airspace purposely. Iranian-backed groups in Syria have tried to infiltrate northern Jordan with drugs and weapons in past months.
We cannot see the Iranian attack far from the real risk that it represents for Jordan. It was obvious that the whole attack was concentrated in Jordan. It's not seen far from what was going on also on the ground in recent months, from the northern borders to even trying to mobilize people inside Jordan. The strategy of Jordan is to send a clear and firm message that we will go against any attempt of violating our sovereignty.
Christian Coates-Erlichson is a Middle East specialist at Rice University's Baker Institute in Texas. He told the online Breaking Defense publication that Iraq could also have intercepted munitions that flew overhead its airspace, but chose not to due to political dynamics. Shortly after the attacks, Jordan's foreign ministry summoned Iran's ambassador over Iranian media comments in which the Iranian leadership appeared to threaten Jordan for joining the U.S.-led effort to support Israel. The report said that if Jordan intervened, it would become the next target. In response, Iran's foreign ministry issued a statement Monday saying it wants to maintain good ties with Jordan. Dale Gavlak, VOA News, Amman.
All political parties in South Sudan should take urgent steps to allow for long-delayed elections to be held later this year. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres wrote in a report published on Wednesday. The French news agency AFP says South Sudan has not held an election since it gained independence from Sudan in 2011, and the nation is plagued by chronic violence, poverty, and natural disasters. Plans for elections have been hobbled by relentless feuding between President Salva Kiir and his arch nemesis, Vice President Riek Machar. International observers remain skeptical that the new timeline culminating in December elections would be maintained, as Kiir and Machar have yet to reach a consensus on staging the elections or even which offices will be up for grabs. And that's it for this Thursday, April 18th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty, Washington State. Have a great day, but please be safe whatever you do.